Hello, I'm Tony Ryan in Adelaide, South Australia, with a series of interviews with contributors to New Male Studies. This open access international journal is available online, newmalestudies.com. That's newmalestudies.com. So what do we know about the health status and behaviours of Australian farming men? As our two researchers in today's interview have noted, national data collection services such as the Australian Bureau of Statistics have failed to differentiate between a rural male and the rural male farmer. An article in New Male Studies, Volume 1, Issue 2, 2012, outlines Australian research into the health status and behaviours of Australian farming men. My guests today are the authors, Associate Professor Susan Brumby from Deakin University in Victoria. Susan is also Foundation Director of the National Centre for Farmer Health. And with Susan is men's health educator Stuart Wilder. Both Susan and Stuart are based at the Western District's Health Service in Hamilton, Victoria. This Skype interview was recorded in February 2013. I began by asking Associate Professor Susan Brumby about the beginnings of this research.
Actually, Tony, there was quite a gap of knowledge about farming men. We had information about rural men, and we certainly had information about agricultural accidents, but the actual health status of men living on farms or agricultural workers was a little bit light on. So it was really our own personal experiences that drove us to want to investigate this a bit more, particularly our own experience of seeing men dying prematurely from preventable diseases such as heart disease and stroke, and also obviously the impairment that occurs from accidents and trauma on the farm.
This leads me, of course, to ask about the Sustainable Farm Families Program.
Yes, so that program was set up originally in 2002 when Stuart and myself and RMIT University and some other partners applied for a grant from the Rural Industries Research Development Corporation. And it was absolutely and unequivocally designed to be looking at the health, well-being and safety of farming men and women, and to actually see if we could make a difference to their health outcomes over a period of 3 years. Not only through assessment, because we know if you just do an assessment, not much happens, but actually through follow-up, action planning and reflective adult learning to actually try and get a better understanding of what would make a difference. And we also made sure we always worked with farming industry groups to actually get that buy-in. And I'd also like to acknowledge Professor John Martin, a social scientist that really helps Stu and I focus and reflect on our own practice and the best way of implementing adult learning. And that was pivotal to the success of the program as well.
What was your background which led you into this?
I've been managing our own family farm for 12 years at that time, which was beef and fine wool. And I guess I had a health background and as well an agricultural and wool classing experience. I'd also done some work in gender studies, so I was particularly interested, I guess, did farm men and farm women behave differently, and or would this program actually have the same effect? So putting a mixture of health and agriculture together, really, and here we are.
Here you are indeed. Stuart, you have a special interest in the health and well-being of men. And of course, like Susan, you're based in a rural area in the state of Victoria. What were the concerns about the health of men in farming communities, and particularly on farms, which led you to work with Susan on this issue?
Tony, we originally did some work in rural areas here in Hamilton, west of Victoria. We actually designed a rural men's health program, and actually we delivered that down in Hayward, where Susan was working as a manager down there, and also extended it to quite a few small rural towns around the vicinity. So my concern from a clinician's point of view was that we knew that men probably weren't getting the information or the education regarding the health. Probably they may have been leaving a few of their indicators a little bit longer to actually get them assessed. And so the program that we developed in terms of sustainable farm families really addressed a lot of those issues in trying to give them education. Number two, and probably most important, was to access the men and actually and their wives in a education setting, and also a setting that was comfortable for them to be involved with, and then to assess the intervention of the education and also the health outcomes from a physical assessment.
So how did you go about this study?
Yes, so this study, well, the paper study is actually a combination of a multitude of studies that Susan and I and co-partners researched. Originally, it started in Victoria and in actual fact it extended to most states within Australia where we looked at farming males and females in their work environment. So this paper actually looks at industries associated with broadacre, cotton and sugar, and dairy. So it actually covers quite a great deal of farming men and women, but obviously the paper we focused predominantly on farm men to find out whether there was any health issues that were of concern, and obviously we reported on the intervention of the education and assessment program over 3 years.
I guess what really impacted on us was that men were so interested in their health. We hear in the media perhaps that men don't want to engage or that they're not interested in their health or safety and well-being, and that wasn't our experience at all. And that was quite a profound moment, I guess, because it then forces you as health professionals or agricultural professionals to question the way that you have been working with people in the previously that hasn't been able to harness and support that genuine concern and interest. And I think that's been the aha, certainly for me, and I think I'm okay saying for Stu.
I think that's right. I think we, yeah. I think from Sue's point of view and mine, we both hit the nail right on the head. And in health and probably in medicine nowadays, it's pretty hard to hit it on the head properly. But I think the package that we developed, where you went to the male and female's environment, you actually delivered it in their community, you used communities to support the program, you went back, and I must say that it's pretty remarkable that Sue and I actually went back to each of these sites for a period of up to 3 years, and in actual fact, we went back another 2 years later. So to actually maintain that partnership where you actually show an interest in the men and the women in the programs, and you actually provide them with some, well, probably some continuity, they really appreciated it. And as Sue said, they do want to know about their health. They are interested. It just may be that they don't know where to get it, but we provided it. And as the research showed, they certainly learnt from the intervention.
I'm very interested in what you're saying because I read in your paper, and Stuart, this was in reference to the National Men's Health Policy, generally poorer health of people living in rural and remote areas. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think you know, obviously the statistics do highlight that there is poorer health in rural and remote areas. And I think as Sue and I have said, you have to design programs that are specific to geographic, you know, areas, and sometimes I think you have to think outside the square of how you deliver it. We're not in a city where you can just rock up to the health clinic or you can rock up and see a GP. So this program truly showed that when you offer them something, they really do harness it and embrace it, and certainly the healthy outcomes that we measured showed that they did take an interest in their own health. And they also were committed to the research, with certainly a return rates over the three-year course of some of the studies was, you know, above 75%. And really, that's quite amazing in research terms.
So what were the main strategies you used in this study?
Thanks, Tony. That's a very good question. We absolutely refocused on our understanding of how adults learn. So it was very much coming from a background where nurses and to some extent other health professionals had thought that if you went and spoke to a group of people and gave them information that somehow they would miraculously absorb that information and change their behaviours. So we really refocused on understanding what makes people, what enables people to change, I guess. So that was a key strategy. We completely really reworked to some extent how we'd been doing men and women's health programs and really focused on that adult learning cycle so we understood it. We made sure we included an assessment so people had their own information about them and that they could then look at that and relate it to what does this mean for me, my family, my farming business. So that was a continual step. And we always, absolutely always, engaged with a farming industry group so that when the farmers met again down the street or to discuss cropping benchmarks or whatever, they also had this common experience of having been doing sustainable farm families. So it was in part of their conversation, you know, how are you going, Tony? How's your cholesterol? Have you put your PTO guard back on? Is your chemical shed built yet? Have you built in your yard to save your kids from drowning? Like, so it was part of their, it was part of packaging it into their business. And by using an industry group, that helped that. And, you know, we very rarely recruited ourselves for participants. It was always through an industry group. And I think that was important. So must have the information, the health assessment, etc. Must understand adult learning, and you must do it in a collaborative way with an industry group. So you're embedding that in.
So in broad terms, what were the findings of your research?
The findings for this collaborative paper that we've written certainly showed that, as Sue said, that men were interested. They were engaged in the education process. They were interested in improving their health. And for those men at risk, the research showed that over the period of the course of the research, we actually improved the health indicators. There's some key indicators we looked at. Obviously, cholesterol and blood pressure were the most significant that we actually improved. But waist measures and certainly blood glucose, as not to as much an extent, but certainly we did have some influence on the indicators over a period of 3 years, which is pretty significant when you consider a lot can happen in 3 years' time to your health, your own health, and that of your partner. So, and there's a lot of other contributing factors such as drought, floods, environmental conditions and such. So what the research did show to us was that we certainly had hit the nail on the head with the research package and the design of the program. The men were interested along with their partners, and that they had maintained an interest in the whole package, that their health was one of the most, if not the most important asset in their family farm. And that continues today with certainly the work that Sue's still doing with the National Centre for Farmer Health, that farming people are interested in their health and that they will value their health as an asset that's important to their business.
One of the areas of concern I noticed in your paper is that of alcohol. And I noticed that this is a significant issue, particularly for farming men in outback Australia. Why is this so, and what can be done to address this issue?
Yeah, look, alcohol was one of the measures that we did look at. And as you'll see in the paper, we've looked at quite a few different farming sectors. The majority of the farming men, their alcohol consumption was what would be considered normal in practices around rural and remote settings. But the remote farming men, certainly in our research, partook in alcohol to a higher level. Now, on investigating that, certainly there was a marked difference in the amount of alcohol that they consumed compared to other farming males. So they were consuming sort of quite large quantities of alcohol, and it was considered maybe a social norm and quite a standard practice that alcohol consumption would occur at the end of the day or even during the day, and whether they associated that with the type of labour that they undertook or whether it was related to the weather and that they needed a quenching ale at the end of the day. It was concerning. they didn't realise certainly the dangers associated with alcohol, and that was certainly one of the parts of our education process, was to highlight that. It would be interesting to go back now and sort of see whether there is any change in alcohol consumption in this cohort, whether they learned something from our education. But yeah, certainly alcohol in most streams, whether we talk about urban or rural, a lot of males and females tend to turn to alcohol as a coping mechanism, maybe to cover up some mental health issues, and certainly to cope with daily stresses as such. So it was an eye-opener. I think it warrants further investigation, and certainly Susan and the centre have done some more work on alcohol consumption across farming families as well.
I think one of the areas for us particularly was that the remote populations had a higher level of body pain, and given that you're a long way from services and things, you know, there is that muscle relaxing effect that alcohol can provide that may also help dim down pain, which the remote populations had a higher level of. The other area is that we never really made much of an impact at all in any of our programs anywhere on changing drinking patterns. We might have had a small impact, but changing drinking patterns is so much more culturally entrenched and so tied up with your social interaction or even the very livelihood of your local sporting club, that to think that us doing a health program and seeing people four times over 3 years would change that, you know, that's fairyland, and it takes a much more strong and concerted effort from community and Australian society in general to change this.
As you were speaking, I was thinking of your earlier comments about adult learning and the adult learning approach, and this must surely be a big challenge for adult educators.
That's right. I remember watching a program this year on Australia Day and people expressing, you know, concern that Australia Day had just now become an excuse for everyone to get pissed for the day, and that we were celebrating that culture. And it's a very different culture from lots of other countries. And it's very much entrenched in rurality. In fact, our early award systems for payments always included rum. So it's been part of our culture.
It leads me to ask, and not just in the context of alcohol, but in the context of the health and well-being of rural men, and particularly farming men, what's the role of women?
I think what we always set out to do, Tony, was to make sure we always addressed all our programs to farming men and women. And the farming partnership is very much caught up usually still with families. So the role of women, whether it's as an active farming partner in terms of physical labour, which is often how we view farming, women are often earning off-farm income and supporting the farm, are often involved with education of children, particularly in further remote areas, and are often heavily involved, and particularly dairy. It was often very much a man and woman working together, raising their family on the farm. So the role of women is very important, and perhaps their economic contribution has been mistaken and undervalued. The other thing that I have some concern about is the attitude of making occupational health and safety, or health in general, you know, the woman's responsibility. And I think that's a big ask. There's a bit of a culture that you also have to break down about, you know, bravado and a risk-taking intrinsicness in some males perhaps. And I don't think you can expect women to be the gatekeepers of men's health and safety behaviours and attitudes. So I have some concerns that we dump stuff on women, expecting them to be able to fix things. But in terms of family partnerships, you know, most farms are still family partnerships, and men and women are very pivotal to both. Having said that, I'm just finishing my PhD, and men and women in this program behaved exactly the same. So that was a very interesting finding.
As we're talking, I'm looking at your article here. I've printed it out from the internet, and it's headed with a pretty great photo, Stuart, of yourself and five other guys around the barbecue. How do you go about involving men in real talk about issues, not only health, but also their mental health issues?
Yeah, that's a good question, Tony. I'm looking at the picture as well. I've got it in front of me. They are a great bunch of guys, and all varied level of complexities, these gentlemen in front of me. So it was really interesting. I think what we found in the program was that we sat the men and women at tables in groups of four or five, and that was a real key that led to one of the successes of the program, because it gave men a license to open up, because much of our conversation was done in table groups. So they communicated in a small group where they were sort of probably a little bit reticent at the start to sort of open up and, you know, express their opinions. You had some that expressed their opinions all the time, and then you had some that would just sit there and quite comfortably take it all in. But what we did find was that each time we came back, more and more were happy to open up and express values, concerns. And it was really actually quite, I think it was a privilege for Sue and I to actually go to these places. I think we learnt more than the men and the women did, because they let us into their lives. And I think many of the people looked around the room and just went, whoa, where did that come from? And men would open up with, yes, I've suffered depression, and would be, you know, quite open about it, but it was sort of cleansing for them as well. Tony, the other aspect that was really important in men opening up was we offered a physical assessment process where they had a one-on-one assessment with Sue or myself. Sue took the females and I took the males, and that took 30 sometimes more, 45 minutes of that one-on-one consultation with the men. And this was a really important time for the men to open up, one, about their physicality and their results that we'd recorded that morning, but two, to actually give them license to open up. And as Sue and I often found, we would need the cleansing ale at the end of the day, because a lot of these men and women had sort of loaded quite a lot of information onto us that was obviously a privilege to know, but also it was great to know that we could help them out. And I think that's another factor that we don't give enough of in health today, is that's time to actually express what's going on and how you're feeling. So certainly that was really enlightening to me, and that's how I certainly communicated with the men. And as I said, once you'd sort of broken the outer edge and the nut, I think you were pretty well in there. And I know that if Sue and I went back up to any of these places, they would open their arms and their houses to us, and I'm sure would be like old foe and friends. So, yeah, they've been really great.
Earlier you used the phrase, letting us into their lives. That's a pretty powerful statement.
It is. It's a very powerful statement. I don't think people get the opportunity to be let into people's lives nowadays. I think everyone puts up a hard exterior that you often don't crack. But certainly farming men and women have been very, very open to this research. And as I said to Sue before and yourself, I think the key was that we stuck together for, I don't know how long it is, you know, it was probably sort of 8 to 10 years of doing this program. And I really think that was probably one of the keys, is that we were reliable. We were always there through floods, through whatever. We had many stories, and you know, we made it there to each of the venues, and I think they really appreciated that. And yeah, that's a real commitment on our behalf, but it's also they gave that commitment back by opening up and actually listening to us. So that was a really important outcome.
What would you hope would be the situation with regard to the health and well-being of farming men in 10 years' time?
I think for me, looking 10 years ahead, the key thing we take away from, I think, sustainable farm families and the further work we've done with farmers is that they have particular challenges and barriers that make, for a variety of reasons, accessing health, well-being and safety a lot more difficult. And so one size doesn't fit all. They're a population group that are worthy of focused, specialised attention, and our health and our agricultural professionals need to be more culturally competent when working with farming men and women or farming families. And that would be my vision. My dream would be that they're actually recognised, that resources are put to this population group, which are different from other population challenges in terms of health, well-being and safety. And we haven't done that. Well, we have, Stu and I have, and the National Centre has, but they haven't been recognised like that.
Susan and Stuart, thank you very much for talking to me today about your research into the health status and well-being of Australian farming men.
Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Tony.
I've been speaking with Associate Professor Susan Brumby from Deakin University in Victoria, and Susan is also the Foundation Director of the National Centre for Farmer Health. And with her was men's health educator Stuart Wilder. Both Susan and Stuart are based at the Western District's Health Service in Hamilton, Victoria. This Skype interview was recorded in February 2013. The full article on the health status and behaviours of Australian farming men is published in New Male Studies, Volume 1, Issue 2, 2012. It's available in full online. Simply go to newmalestudies.com. That's newmalestudies.com. In Adelaide, South Australia, I'm Tony Ryan.